Ezra chapter 6. We're actually going to spend some time in 5 again, but we'll be mostly in chapter 6. Ezra chapter 6. You know, God blesses obedience. God blesses obedience. You're going to hear me say that several times tonight because I want that to stick in your mind. God blesses obedience. I've seen this over and over in my own life. You know, when I've disobeyed God, I have a guilty conscience and feel miserable. However, when I obey God, God blesses. And He gives peace, joy, guidance, answers to prayer. It's a blessing to have God pleased with the way I live. And that's what we want. And, you know, my life has not been perfect, but when I have obeyed God, God has blessed. And I praise God for that. You know, think about your own life. You know, if you learned this the hard way like I have, because sometimes when we don't obey, things don't go so good. We kind of talked about that a little bit this morning. Jonah had a lot of problems there because he didn't obey God. But when we obey God, we can sense God's peace and His guidance, His joy, His direction. And this ought to be a pattern in our lives. We ought to be able to see God's blessing when we obey. And from the earliest chapters of the Bible in Genesis there, all the way to the end of the book of Revelation, we find multitudes of examples of God's showing us that He blesses obedience. Over and over again, we see that in the lives of people. We see a lot of examples of what happens when they disobey and they get themselves into trouble. King Saul disobeyed God and got himself into all kinds of trouble, lost the kingdom, and you know, David disobeyed God, and Jonah disobeyed God, and lots of people disobeyed. But there's also the examples of the obedient ones that are blessed by God, and God used them. But you know, one example that we find in the book of 1 Samuel chapter 2. 1 Samuel chapter 2 is about Eli. Remember Eli? He was a priest. And Eli had two sons, Hophni and Phinehas. And they were not good sons. They were evil sons. And he favored his sons instead of obeying God. He knew what God wanted, but his sons disobeyed, and he sided with his sons rather than siding with God. And 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse number 30 says this. This is a word that God sent through a man of God to Eli. You know, you just picture in your mind, here's the man of God shows up at Eli's door, and he says, "I've got a message from God for you." And Eli said, yeah, what is it? He was probably a bit nervous. And the man of God says, "Wherefore the Lord God of Israel saith, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now the Lord saith, be it far from me, for them that honor me I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed." What tragic words. God's telling Eli that because you honor not me, you honor your sons over me, you are lightly esteemed in my eyes. In other words, I think very little of you. We don't want to be on that side. That's not what we want God saying about us. We find another example of this that comes closer to home, perhaps. Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 16, it says, "Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may... honor thy father and thy mother, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee, that thy days may be prolonged, and that it may be go well with thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee." What a blessing. God said, if we honor our father and our mother and do what they ask us to do as God commanded us, then God says, I'm going to prolong your days and I am going to make things go well with you. Isn't that what we want? Most everybody that I know of wants to live as long as possible and have things go good. That's exactly what God said. And He said, we'll do this. If we'll honor our parents, I'll honor you. And so this theme throughout the Bible, God blesses obedience. God blesses obedience. Say that with me tonight. I want you to make sure you're catching this. Say it with me. God blesses obedience. Do it again. God blesses obedience. All right, now keep that in mind all the way through tonight, because we're going to see that this is played out in the lives of the people of Israel here in Ezra chapter 5 and chapter 6 as they were there in Jerusalem working to rebuild the temple. God blesses obedience. Now, we see this, first of all, that God blessed Israel's obedience when they obeyed God's prophets. We saw that when we back in chapter 5, verse number 1. It says, "Then the prophets Haggai and the prophet Zechariah, the son of Iddo, prophesied unto the Jews that were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel, even unto them. Then arose Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, and began to build the house of God, which is in Jerusalem, and with them were the prophets of God helping them." All right, so Haggai and Zechariah started preaching to the people, motivated them, got them going, and the people, and starting with the leaders down, obeyed God. They did what God asked them to do. And we see in chapter 5 and verse number 5 that God's eye was upon them because they obeyed. Verse 5, "But the eye of their God was upon the elders of the Jews, that they could not cause them to cease till the matter came to Darius. And then they returned answer by letter concerning this matter." Once again, we see here that God gave them courage and instruction and strength to be able to press on and to serve God and to continue the work that they had begun. So these prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, roused the people up, got them working at rebuilding the temple. And once they got rebuilding on that temple, then they were opposed by the governor. And when the governor says, "What are you doing? Who gave you permission to do this?" And then they politely, we talked about that last time, they politely responded to him, but their eyes of their God were upon the elders of the land. That is a wonderful thing. We need God's eye upon us. Now, it's not like God can't see us. The idea of this phrase, "the eye of the Lord was upon him," is not that God wiped away the clouds and he could see them. No, it wasn't that. It was God was watching over them. God was keeping his eye upon them and helping them and encouraging them. And all of us need that. We need God's watchful eye upon us so that God is looking down upon us with favor. And as a result, did you see there? He says that they could not cause them to cease. God's eye was upon them. No matter how much pressure they put upon them, they said, "We're not going to cease." And God gave them the ability to resist that. And they stood up and said, "No, we're not going to cease. We're going to keep on working until you get word from Darius that we can't do this." And so we noted that last time. They were polite, the devil's in all that kind of way. We're not going to dig into that again. But we see here that they obeyed the preaching of the prophets. But then secondly, we see that God's blessed them because they obeyed God's prompting. All right, once again here in verse number 5, God prompted them to request that Darius search the records. Now, let's just review in our minds. Cyrus was the king that set them free. And they began to build. And it had been 16 years since they arrived in Jerusalem. They started good. They got a start in the temple. Made some progress. Laid the foundation stones. But then they got scared off by the people who questioned them. And they backed off and they didn't work at it for a long time. 16 years had passed. And now Haggai and Zechariah come on the scene and said, "Come on, guys, let's get going. Let's work on this. God will help us if we'll do right." And the prophets prophesied and encouraged and motivated them. But they obeyed God's promptings here, and they asked the governor to send a letter to Darius and have him search the records to see that Cyrus really did tell them to do this. Now, back there in Persia, the leadership had changed. It had been Cyrus. Now it's Darius. And when there's ever a change of leadership, you know, they don't pay much attention to what the other guy was telling people to do. They're doing it their own way. And so Darius needed to be contacted about this. And so this is what they did. They asked for this to take place. They were following God's prompting. So they probably, I can just imagine these men, the leaders of Israel. The governor says, who gave you permission to do this? Why are you doing this? What right do you have to do this? And right there with them was Haggai and Zechariah and all the leaders. And they said, you know, let us just have some time to pray together first. And they probably got together. Haggai and Zechariah prayed with them and said, listen, we need to just tell them the way it is. And just ask them. Remember, Cyrus told us we could come. We need to ask them politely to go search the records, find out what Cyrus said, and see what they say. And so they answered him back in this manner, and they were polite and diplomatic about it. And so God blessed their prompting and their request by stirring Darius' heart to search the records. We see there in chapter 6 and verse number 1. Then Darius the king made a decree, and search was made in the house of the rolls, where the treasures were laid up in Babylon. And there was found in Archemia, in the palace, that is in the province of the Medes, a roll, and therein was recorded thus written, the record thus written. In the first year of Cyrus the king, the same Cyrus the king, made a decree concerning the house of God at Jerusalem. Let the house be built, and the place where they offered sacrifices, and let the foundations thereof be strongly laid, the height thereof 70 cubits, and the breadth thereof 70 cubits, with 3 rows of great stones, and a row of new timber, and let the expenses be given to the king's house, out of the king's house. And also, let the gold and silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar took forth out of the temple which is at Jerusalem, and brought unto Babylon, be restored and brought again unto the temple which is at Jerusalem, every one his place, and place them in the house of God. Now therefore, Tattenai the governor... Alright, so that was the request. And then he addresses the governors there. Alright, so let's just take a look at this request here. He searched, they found out that Cyrus certainly did say that. Not only did Cyrus say they could build, Cyrus said that he told them how big it should be, he told them that he would provide the finances for it, and he gave them all the vessels that were in the temple, which Nebuchadnezzar stole and took back to Babylon with him. Priceless treasures, because they are purest of gold and silver. And so, but he gave them all back to them. And so they've searched, they've asked that, and then the king writes back, and he says, now therefore, Tattenai, governor beyond the river, and Caesar Bosnai, and your companions, the Ephershithites, which are beyond the river, be ye far from sense. Let the work of this house of God alone. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews build this house of God in this place. What an answer to prayer. See, they gave it to God in obedience. They yielded to God. They yielded to God's promptings, and God blessed them. God caused Darius to be able to search. Darius could have said, forget it, I'm not going to go all that work to try to dig through all these clay tablets and find the one that might have something on there. But he did. He did what they asked, and they found the writing, whether it was on a clay tablet or on a scroll or something. He had it in his archives and found it, and found what it said, and he verified what it said. Now, God blessed by moving Darius to make some decrees that were going along with this. So he first of all tells them, leave them alone. Don't touch them. Let them work. What a great thing. That is exactly what they wanted to hear. But he goes beyond that. Verse number 8, moreover, I make a decree. What ye shall do to the elders of these Jews for the building of the house of God, that of the king's goods, even of the tribute beyond the river, forthwith expenses be given unto these men, that they be not hindered. Think of that. The king says, I want you to pay these guys for their work so that they don't slow down. They can work full time. They don't have to think about going back to the fields and work in the fields so they can find some grain and eat. No, he says, you pay them. So God had the king, Darius, do basically the same thing Cyrus did. He says, I want you to pay them out of the king's expense and take care of them. And then he goes on, verse 9, that which they have need of, both of young bullocks and of rams and of lambs, for the burnt offerings of the God of heaven, wheat and salt and wine and oil, according to the appointment of the priests which are at Jerusalem, let it be given them day by day without fail. He says, anything that they need for their sacrifices to their God, you give it to them, all that they need. Another blessing. He goes on in verse 10, that they may offer sacrifices of sweet savor unto the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and his sons. Now this is a pagan king. He said, I want you to bless them so that they will offer prayers for me and my sons. We need their God's favor on us as well. He continues, verse 11, also I have made a decree that whosoever shall alter this word, let timber be pulled down from his house, and being set up, let him be hanged thereon, and let his house be made a dunghill for this. He said, if anybody goes against what I just said, tear down their house, build a gallows, and hang them on that gallows, and let their house be a dunghill, a place where you pile all the rubbish. And then he adds one more thing to it. This guy's really treating them well. God's blessing. Verse number 12. And the God that hath caused his name to dwell there, destroy all kings and people that shall put their hand to the altar and to destroy this house of God, which is at Jerusalem. I, Darius, have made a decree. Let it be done with speed. So he says here one last thing. I want the God of the Jews to place a curse on anybody who does anything to hurt this work. See, Darius here, God is blessing these people because they waited on God. They didn't attack back. They didn't fight back. They simply said, would you please ask Darius to search the records and see what the records say. And they did that in obedience to God's prompting in their hearts, and God blessed them very abundantly. Then we see one last thing, is that God blessed Israel's obedience when they obeyed God's plan. Verse number 14. The elders of the Jews builded and they prospered through the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the son of Iddo. And they builded and finished it according to the commandment of the God of Israel and according to the commandment of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes, king of Persia. Right now, they kept on working. They had worked all through the time. I mean, you can't just call up. There wasn't any text messages. There wasn't any phone calls. It was a long wait. They had to send people back to Babylon, check it all out, and find out this information, and then send them all back again. So it's a 3 or 4 months journey there, 3 or 4 months journey back. So they kept on working all this time and kept on doing what God wanted them to do. And they kept building as God had told them to do that. And we see that in verse 14. They kept on building. And then we see that they were building under the ministry and prophesying of Haggai and Zechariah. Now, one thing I want to point out. Did you notice how big the temple was? All right, back in verse number 5. Verse number 3. All right. It says there that the height of thereof was 60 cubits, and the breadth was 60 cubits. How big is that? That's big. In feet, that's 90 feet. In cubits, or in meters, that's 27.4 meters. That's high. That's a long way up there. I remember On the farm, growing up, we had a silo for food for the cattle. It was 80 feet. And I tell you, when I got it on top of that, I kind of shook in my boots and looked down there. Ooh, that's a long way down. Whew. I'm not a person for heights. This was another 10 feet higher. This was 27.4 meters up. It's a long way up. And they were building this temple. All these stones. Somebody had to carry all the stones all the way up there. And the timbers and the things that they were building, it didn't just happen. It was a lot of work. And he said it was also 27.4 meters wide. This is a big place. It was not a small little building. And they worked diligently at this. So it was a big task that they were involved in here. And the prophets kept preaching to them and encouraged them. And you know, through the preaching of the prophets, they kept on doing the right thing. You know, that's one of the reasons that God has planned for preachers in a congregation. You know, why did God, we might say, well, why did God ordain a local church? And why did he have preachers? And why did he, you know, why not just do it like they did in the Old Testament, where you just had a prophet that wandered around once in a while and he'd gather a few people here and there and talk to them? God had a plan. And God knew that Christians needed a family. They needed a home. They needed a place where they could gather together. They needed someone to guide them. Like a sheep, the sheep needs a shepherd to care for them. And so God has for pastors to be able to be there to challenge and to motivate and to encourage the people. And that is my job, and that is the job of every pastor, to be able to do that. And it's sometimes a daunting job. But they built it until they finished the work. From the time that Haggai began preaching and the work was recommenced, it took 3 years and 9 months to build that temple. It's pretty fast. It took Solomon longer than that. Solomon's was probably more fancy and bigger, but you calculate it out. You can look in the book of Haggai, and he tells exactly what day it was and when it was. It said it was from the sixth month of the second year, and then they went until the third month of the sixth year. You work that out, and you'll find 3 years and 9 months that they were working on it. Now, they'd already laid the foundations. How much of the foundation, we don't really know. But they had gotten a good start on it, and then they quit. And then Haggai and Zechariah motivated them to get moving again. And for another 3 years and 9 months, they worked on it diligently, with being paid by the king and provided by the king. And God blessed them, and they were able to get this finished. They finished the job. And God blessed the work and enabled them to complete it quickly. They finished the temple in 515 B.C. Okay, so 515 B.C. So that's 2,500 years ago, or thereabouts. Okay, so God blessed them and met their needs. And then we see that they dedicated the temple to the Lord. Chapter 6 again, in verse number 16. And the children of Israel, the priests and the Levites, and the rest of the children of the captivity, kept the dedication of the house of God with joy. They offered at the dedication of the house of God, and 100 bullocks, bullock was a young bull, cow, 200 rams, 400 lambs, and for a sin offering for all Israel, 12 he-goats according to the number of the tribes of Israel. And they set the priests in their divisions. What's that mean? They set the priests in their divisions. Well, they divided it up into, all right, you're going to be working this month, and you're going to be working this month. And, you know, they divided them up because there were several priests, and they gave them all their... And remember when Zechariah, John the Baptist's dad, it was his turn to go in and do the services in the tabernacle. Those are their courses. All right? So they divided this up again like they did there, by their courses for their service of God which is at Jerusalem, as it is written in the book of Moses. So they followed the book of Moses and divided it all up like they're supposed to. And the children of Israel, verse 19, of the captivity, kept the Passover upon the 14th day of the first month. So not only did they have this dedication of the temple, but then they also celebrated the Passover, the most significant holiday of the year, remembering their exodus from Egypt, killing the lamb and the blood and the bitter herbs and all the things that went along with that. So they killed the Passover and remembered that time. And then verse number 20, for the priests and the Levites were purified together. All of them were pure, and they killed the Passover for all the children of the captivity and for the brethren, the priests, and for themselves and the children of Israel were come again out of the captivity, and all such as had separated themselves unto them from the filthiness of the heathen of the land to seek the God of Israel did eat. All right, now, notice that. Why did God add that little note in there? Verse number 21. He said they had separated themselves from the filthiness of the heathens of the land. Before we come to God, God wants us to make sure that we get things out of our lives that shouldn't be there. And that's an important truth. And these people were obeying God. And as they obeyed God, God blessed them. They obeyed God, the temple was built. They obeyed God, and they followed the rules for the Passover, for the divisions of the priests, and for all that was taking place here. And they cleansed themselves, got the sin out of their lives. Verse number 22, and they kept the feast of unleavened bread 7 days with joy. Now remember, the Passover was on the 14th day of the first month, and then the 15th day of the month began a 7-day festival called the unleavened bread. And so they kept that as well. And they turned their heart, middle of 22, let's start at the beginning. And they kept a feast of unleavened bread 7 days with joy, for the Lord had made them joyful and turned the heart of the king of Syria unto them to strengthen their hands in the work of the house of God and the God of Israel. They were rejoicing and praising God that God had turned the heart of the king. This is a great thing. God had turned the heart of that pagan king. Here's a pagan king that knew nothing of God. At least he didn't worship God. He probably had some testimony. Remember, who would have given him some testimony back in Persia? Daniel? Remember, it was Darius that threw Daniel into the lion's den. So he would have known a little bit of these things of God. But he honors them, and he honors their work and honors the God of heaven. And why did all this happen? Because they obeyed God. God blesses obedience. And you know, as we think about that and make some applications here, about 16 years earlier, God had sent them back from Babylon to Jerusalem to do this building. And they started, made a good start, got discouraged, and they quit. But then, as a result of their disobedience, God removed His blessings. That was the big message we saw there in Haggai, remember? Haggai said there in chapter 1, verse 6, he said, "Ye have sown much, and bring in little. You eat, but ye have not enough. You drink, but ye are not filled with drink. Ye are clothed, but there is none warm. And he that earneth wages to put them into a bag with holes." Said, "I'm not blessing you." But as soon as they obeyed God, God's blessing came back on again. And so the thing we see here again, God is saying, we need to obey God in order to have God's blessing. And after years of neglect, they went back to God, and God turned on the blessings for them. You know, if your Christian life has been lacking vitality, just feeling like I'm not what I ought to be, something's missing. Not what I ought to be. Then you need to ask yourself, is there any area where I'm not obeying God? That's a good soul-searching question to ask ourselves. Is there any area where I'm not obeying God? talked this morning about reading our Bible and meditating upon the Scriptures. Maybe there's some secret habit that we know displeases God. Do we control our spirit? Does anger get a hold of us and take control? Lust, bitterness, selfishness? Does our tongue get out of control? Do we look for opportunities to witness for the Lord? Do we give to our local church? You know, this morning we touched on a lot of these things. But the two messages really overlap here and reinforce what we saw this morning. God's word is clear regarding these issues. We know what's right and wrong. You know, most of the time as Christians, our issue isn't, I didn't know. Most of the time is, I knew, but I didn't do it. That's usually our problem. It's not ignorance most of the time. But the thing I want you to go away with tonight is those three words. God blesses obedience. God blesses obedience. And after obeying God and completing the temple, the people rejoiced greatly. They had a great time celebrating at this dedication of the temple. They had a great time rejoicing at the Passover. It was a time of great joy. They had gotten right with God and God was blessing them. And the same will be true with us. You know, if there's an area of your life where you know deep down inside you need to work on, you're not obedient completely. Maybe you are partly, but not completely. God wants us to be completely obedient. You know, remember King Saul obeyed God partly, but he didn't do all that God asked him to do. And as a result, God took the kingdom away from him. God said, I want full obedience. And that is true with us as well. So if there's an area where there's not the obedience that there ought to be, just ask God for forgiveness and ask him to help you to be what you ought to be. And God will bless you for obedience. So God blesses obedience.